Welcome, everyone. Go around and say hi, starting with Jill and Sam, Sydney, Bob K, Jim, Mark, W, I don't see the other Mark here tonight, Jeff, Karen, Tyler, John, Dawn, Franklin, Jeannie, Gathel, Marv, Drew, Susan, Coral and Carson, and Ruth Ann. So, welcome everyone. I'm pretty sure you have heard all of my announcements. Let's see. This Saturday, is a one-day retreat. Join us for part of it or all of it. Sweet day to unplug and simplify, spend some time together. You also might want to set aside some retreat time for around the beginning of December for our online Rohatsu. And I think that's about it. In November, can't remember if it's the 11th or something, it's on the calendar. Just a heads up that there is our annual members meeting will be happening on a Sunday. That is when the board of directors lets you know the basics of like how is the Zen Center doing financially and who's running it, what kind of decisions are being made, and just a chance to ask questions about what the next year might look like. Should be kind of interesting, actually, given our kind of unique situation in the lockdown here and where might we be going. And so, think about attending that. And also, I haven't ironed out the date yet, but my Dharma brother Kakamyo will be coming to give a Dharma talk on one of the Sundays in November. Oh, and I should say also, November 1st, so that's not this. Oh yeah, then we have Sagaki coming up November 8th. But before that, the Sunday before that, November 1st, Jinryu will be giving a way-seeking mind talk. So Mark is given one of those, Choketsu is given one of those. It's basically, what have you learned on your Dharma journey? We all have something to share from our journey. So Jinryu is going to be doing that, seeing as I have a nonviolent civil disobedience action that I am helping to plan and carry out on Halloween. This is around the climate, and it will be on, I might as well announce, it'll be on Hawthorne Boulevard, 2 to 4 p.m. It'll be a parade of extinct and endangered species, and should be kind of fun as well as disruptive. So think about showing up for that, and perhaps, you never know how these things go, but perhaps seeing your Zen priest be carted away by the cops. So come one, come all. In which case, if I am, for instance, still occupied or extremely tired come Sunday, then Jinryu will be giving the talk. I will try to attend in any case. Any questions or other announcements? All right.
I was just wondering if for the one-day retreat on, is there a sitting schedule posted on the website?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you click on the event on the calendar, then it should pop up. So it's a sweet little schedule that, there's stuff that we do together, communal practice, and then there's suggested you know, activities for what you do when we're not together. You don't, you do what you want to do, of course, but suggested silent, simple work or suggested rest period. So you can make a like 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. day of it if you want. All right. I'm just going to turn up my light here. There we go. Can see a little better. Oof. So today we are continuing on The World Could Be Otherwise by Norman Fisher. We're on to chapter 2, The Perfection of Generosity. So I'm not going to follow and the first half of the chapter. Next week we'll do the second half of the chapter. So I'm not going to follow exactly the order that he covers things. Just kind of chose my own order. So I wanted to start off with the three types of gifts. So he talked about this is a traditional Buddhist teaching, I guess. There's many, many different ways to describe the Dharma, and this is one way. So he said there's material gifts, and then there's gifts of teaching and inspiration. It's the second category. And then the gift of fearlessness. That was really, really cool. I wanted to do a screen share brainstorm about, let's see. Once again, I'm looking for Microsoft Word. Jeez. Well, here, I'll just do it on a notepad. So to do a list of acts of generosity, because we've done this before together under different kinds of discussions, but I think it's always useful to brainstorm a little bit about all the different ways that generosity can manifest, because it kind of expands our thinking. Oftentimes the first place that we go is material, acts of material giving, which is certainly apply. But when you really start going, really start brainstorming, the acts of generosity are quite, there's, you know, almost no limit. So go ahead and unmute yourself if you can think of an act of generosity.
It's actually happened to me twice in the last couple months. Pulling through a drive-thru, the person in line before me had bought my meal.
Wow. Wow. What a sweet thing.
Watching your kids, free babysitter.
Baking cookies for your neighbors. Asking.
How about calling someone you know isn't feeling well?
Giving somebody your full attention.
Mm.
Reaching out to new coworkers that are remote.
What about organizing and attending protests? Poignant.
Giving someone feedback in a non-judgmental way, in an honest way. A friend just shared with me today that she did that with someone she was sitting next to at the airport. And she said abuse, verbal abuse from this person just was unexpected and shocking. So she just felt she had to somehow respond, but in a non-judgmental way, and it shifted the energy. But, I think that's a form of generosity to yourself and the other person.
Volunteering for a nonprofit.
Giving hope.
Spending time.
The one that Norman talked about that really got me was taking care of yourself. He goes into that bit.
Taking your dog to visit a sick neighbor.
Kind of on the same idea of just taking care of yourself. I know when I was younger, like when I was in college, I had a professor who always encouraged his students to like take classes outside of our majors. He was our advisor, and he was really supportive of like our emotional and like physical health. Like he always wanted us to take PE classes and art classes, and even though we were all science majors. And I know it's kind of one thing I try to do with my students is like, even though I want to give them my time to like teach them what I have to teach them, like I always try to encourage them, like, hey, why don't you go see if you can join the basketball team or join this club, you know, like, so in a way it's kind of like not putting yourself first in there. I don't know how to phrase it, but like encouraging people to like explore on their own, like giving up your priority in their life so that they can do things for themselves. Mm. That makes sense.
I would say giving your knowledge and experience in something that, you know, without your ego kind of involved, it's really just giving. Mentoring, I guess. That's probably the word I'm looking for.
I went to get my hair cut yesterday and sat down in the chair of somebody I've known for years, and we did the "so how are you" thing. And I actually hate that question, but I did say, "so how are you?" And she had a very, very rough summer. I hadn't seen her for a while, with her dad in and out of the hospital. It was just awful. And it felt like a big act of generosity just to sit and listen. Mm. There's nothing I could fix. I just listened. and it was actually really, it was a really, like the most meaningful haircut I've ever had. It was really great.
Collecting donations for fire victims.
sometimes just a smile, perhaps, especially when someone's in a situation where they don't, people might not really look at them very often, might not meet their eyes.
Going to say the same thing. You know, you just go to the grocery store and everybody's wearing masks and you can't really see smiles, but you know, you can try to smile with your eyes. I try to do that, or say hello, a friendly hello through the mask. If I'm walking my dog, you know, people are just kind of, I just when somebody smiles and says hello to me just nicely, it feels good, you know. It's unexpected, and yeah. So I try to do that because sometimes I'm uncomfortable or I don't want to.
Kind of a weird one that just popped into my mind was, you know, in addition to like saying hello or how are you and listening, asking follow-up questions. I mean, I know it sounds very teacherly, but I had a student very weirdly like mention Turkish Delight in class. And so I was like, where did you hear of Turkish Delight? And, you know, then they went to the Chronicles of Narnia. And then after class, you know, they came up and we had a great conversation about how much we both love the Chronicles of Narnia. So it's like, you know, not just listening, but also how can I engage with what's being said and encourage them more? So yeah, that like follow-up question part to show that you really are listening. And care.
Last one I have is being apathetic.
Being apathetic?
No, empathetic.
It's good, like
apathetic. No, that's probably not a good one.
Interesting. How is that? Empathetic. Got it. Sometimes it's an act of generosity kind of related, being vulnerable. Honest about your difficulties or feelings. The list can go on and on, really. I just appreciate reminding ourselves that like this goes beyond just material stuff, and it goes just beyond even sometimes time or favors or that kind of thing. So let's see, on page 30, Norman says, if as living beings, which he says, we are heir to a generous spirit, what blocks it? We have to investigate this. We have to become diligent students of our own minds, messy and unpleasant as they often are. We study our minds by noticing in detail whenever we feel pinched, small, fearful, or stingy. Whenever we find ourselves seeing the glass half empty rather than half full, or clenching up with defensive and protective feelings. We learn to identify these feelings in our bodies and minds, noticing the tightness in our chests and breathing, the clenching in our shoulders and faces, the old familiar paranoid and panicky trains of thought. With lots of patient repetition and training, eventually we learn to notice these things before they run away with us. We learn to catch ourselves in midstream and just literally stop. If we are walking, we stop walking. If we're sitting, we stand up. We take a conscious breath or two and ask ourselves, is this really true? Am I really under attack? Is there really not enough to go around? And we ask further, what are the effects of this habit of mind? This process and these questions are practices. We take them up repeatedly. We work at them. So I wanted to do a breakout exploring in part what, because he talks about how our attitudes are what block generosity. Our attitudes, our stances are what block our natural flow of generosity. So I wanted to ask, what is one example that you can think of in your life of a generous act, the kinds of things that we were talking about, that you tend to find it kind of difficult to take or to follow through on? You tend to be kind of blocked with a bad attitude. And one example of something that you find kind of easy. So a lot of times these easy things, these ways that we are fairly easily, naturally generous, oftentimes these are, they're not things that we think, oh my, I'm being generous right now, right? This is oftentimes something that we often hear from somebody else, right? They'll say, you know, I really appreciated this, or I really admire the way you do this, or something. It's kind of a comment on what tends to you to perhaps flow kind of naturally. I mean, it doesn't have to be, but that could be an example of something you find kind of easy. Let's see. And Bob's saying, look at the list again. So here's one thing I was going to do, because it's tricky with the whole screen share. I even watched this video beforehand. Like, if you're a teacher and you send people into breakout rooms, how do you communicate with them? And it turns out that there's no good way. But one of the things is to basically create an online document and give y'all a link to it. So then you can kind of pull it up in another window. So depending on what kind of device you're on, that may or may not work for you. So let me just put, I'm going to put our list of, our list of acts of generosity. they're kind of spaced out pretty far. Let's see. There we go. All right. Acts of generosity is on the first page. And then the second page has the question for the breakouts. And I will give you the link and put it in the chat. So before you go off, and if you want to, or somebody in your group hopefully will have this. So this has what we brainstormed so far in terms of acts of generosity, plus the questions for the breakouts. So I will recreate those rooms and invite you. I'll do about 10 minutes. Again, so we can start recording. Okay. Zoom's been kind of weird tonight. All right, so our attitudes aren't fixed. Neither is the world, neither are we. In the Bodhisattva path, we don't assume anything is fixed and solid. And we don't assume that our picture of the world is the way the world has to look. This is where imagination enters in. Imagination is a warm breeze that loosens up what seems rigid and cold. Bodhisattvas have imagination. They assume that anything can be fluid and warm, subject to challenge and revision. They see that everything is provisional and open. Inspired by their imaginations, bodhisattvas believe that there are always possibilities. The perfection of generosity confronts and softens our basic attitudes. To practice it is to appreciate the natural abundance of being, the inherent generosity of time and space, and the ongoing unfolding of life. These are exquisite gifts. Life itself is generous. Life is always making more life. Life is abundant and expansive, never stingy or small-minded. It keeps on going, bubbling up, and expanding whenever it has a chance. So this sense of really, really deep sufficiency, I would say that this is something that we can work on in our practice at a couple of different levels. The kind of level that Norman's talking about in this chapter, not entirely, but primarily, is kind of our, what I call the karma relationship level. Working on our, you know, examining what's going on in our minds and hearts, and learning to be mindful, learning how to slow down and not just be carried away by our habit energies, learning to employ imagination and expand things. And so it's work. And he says that several times, it's work. At one point he calls it emotional yoga. But he also talks about how our meditation assists with this as well, this opening up. And I guess I would say that this sense of sufficiency instead of lack, which means that our generosity doesn't tend to get as blocked, is a deep spiritual matter. That this is, at the deepest level, this is what awakening is about. is directly experiencing the way in which we have everything we need. And in that sense of overcoming fear, in that sense of giving up grasping after things for happiness, that sense of sufficiency, that is what we're working on in the samadhi power aspect of our practice. So the karma relationship aspect is kind of the, you know, we got to do the work with this karmic package that we are. We ended up with these attitudes and these attachments and these foibles. And, you know, in our group, we were talking about each of us tends to be attached to different things. Like, some of us are really kind of stingy with our time. Some of us are a little more just, you know, worried about our, you know, giving away money too freely. Not that always, you know, has a little bit more of a question attached to it. So we have these are karmic things that we want to examine and work on, but at a deep level, at the deepest level, being able to directly experience that sense of peace and wholeness and abundance is what really allows us to open up in a more full and lasting way. So he talks about on page 29, the practice of the perfection of generosity eventually affects a basic attitude shift toward the recognition that we are living creatures who share in life's abundance, freedom, and energy. So we always have possibilities. We always find a way, no matter how or what, to further our life. We just have to figure out how to stop getting in our own way. This is where the intentional practice of the perfection of generosity helps. Someone once asked Tang Dynasty Zen Master Baizhang why giving is the gateway to the Bodhisattva path. Baizhang answered that it is because to practice giving is to practice letting go. The monk then asked, "What do you let go of?" Baizhang said, "You let go of narrow views. You let go of the idea that things are small and tight, graspable and possessable." So it's like we practice generosity in order to practice this letting go and to open up to that sense of letting go of that small view. But then with the samadhi power aspect, we practice kind of directly letting go of that small view, and then it helps our generosity. So in another breakout, I wanted to see if you could think of a time when you were able to let go of your narrow views and feel a sense of abundance, freedom, and energy, a time when generosity flowed easily. So this situation may have been because of a practice that you did. Maybe it was in the course of a retreat, or maybe it arose spontaneously. It was just like one afternoon in the sunshine in my backyard or something like that. Or it may have been because of particular circumstances. Perhaps a time when you felt you had a lot to offer. You know, that kind of expansive sense of being able to shower benefit on people in some way. Maybe it was an instance where we were teaching others, or, you know, hosting people at some kind of event, or I don't know, some point at which you yourself felt that kind of bounty. And therefore, the generosity flowed really easily. And then to describe that experience, if you can. And then if you end up with nothing else to talk about, if that's possible, one of the things that I had tagged on to the last one is if you can think of any examples of you've witnessed generosity that other people have done in that sense that has filled you with a sense of admiration or gratitude. So some, and maybe it's not, maybe this isn't even an example where you necessarily performed like acts of generosity that you can point to, but just maybe that just more of that sense of bounteousness and abundance, that freedom from that limited view of lack. So. Invite you. Doesn't look like we're no? All right. yeah, so we don't, you know, whether the gift we're giving is actually going to be appropriate or helpful. So I thought I'd just quickly share another like three kinds of gifts. And that is the, that it's another Buddhist list of some kind. The first, you give what you yourself would want, you know, picture like a little kid and like they, you know, come up with you to the sticky lollipop or something because that's what they would love. So, you know, that's their act of generosity, is they're giving you something that they would like. Then we give what somebody themselves wants. But the most skillful kind of giving is giving what would actually be beneficial to someone. So then that opens the whole question, right? What would be the most beneficial? How do we even know that? So, I wanted to suggest that people choose one of the practices at the end of this chapter to try for the week, and then report on it next week. So on page 52, there's quite a list of neat, pretty minor little practices that you can try to insert in your week and then report back. And I was gonna have you all like go into breakout rooms and commit, but we won't do that. So just to wrap up our few minutes, I did have a question here of asking you to, if you can think of a time when someone has given you fearlessness. So I thought this was a very sweet, this type of gift, giving gift of fearlessness, giving the gift of strength and sufficiency and whatever. So I don't know if anybody has an example that they would like to share to close out our evening. Ruthann?
Well, briefly, a friend recently said that she went for counseling. This was some years back. And this counselor said, "Oh, I can't help you. You're so blocked. I can't possibly do anything for you." Straight away, right at the beginning. And this friend of mine has been trying to help her two kids who have long-time addictions. So when she just told me that, I said, that counselor was so unprofessional because she couldn't deal with whatever your issue brought up for her. And that was very wrong for her to do that. And it just kind of bounced out at me. And my friend, mutual friend, said, I think that's called support. And I didn't even think about it. I guess the training in me just said, wait, you can't keep carrying that. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes words are so heavy.
Yeah. Thank you. Jeannie?
Well, this is going to be a moment of vulnerability for me, but it was about a year ago. I had a job a year ago that was extremely stressful. I was in a supervisory position and the demands were unreasonable. And I was trying to do it. I ended up having a panic attack at work. Never have had that happen before. People, you know, it was just awful. It felt humiliating. It felt terrible. This place would not let you take time off very easily. They would question it, things like that. So I take time off a couple times a year and I see my son. I have an adult son. He's 20, well, he's 30 now. He was 29 or 28 at the time. And we're very close. And we have this thing that we do where we just go we get some breakfast food and we sit in our car and we just chat. We find a nice place to park. And
it's 21 hours.
And we've been doing that since he was younger. It's just been our thing. And I was talking to him and just, we're real with each other. And I said, you know, this job is untenable, having a really hard time. And I was just trying to be brave. And I had done something that I was really ashamed of. I had told my supervisor some big elaborate lie so that I could have some time off. And I shared that with my son eventually. And I felt so awful. And it was so I could come and see him again. And he was lovely and honest. And he said, I wouldn't do that. You know, and I'm like, I did that already. And I said, what do I do now? You know, but it was just this lovely exchange and I was just crying and he just wrapped his arms around me and it was so forgiving, so lovely. And I felt fearlessness after that. Yeah. You know, I thought, I did this lie. I'm going to make it right. I'm going to figure out what to do. And I was able to kind of be lifted out of my fears, my vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. It was just such a gift. And he didn't know he was giving that to me. He was just talking and exchanging, but he was very accepting and caring, said the right thing at the right time. And it was really great. I thought, you know, ugly grown woman telling this big lie to my sleep. I'm like, why am I doing this? I don't need to do this. But it was just, you know, I can say that now, but at the time, but it was a beautiful, beautiful gift. And because of the acceptance and the honesty, you know, he's like, I wouldn't do that. Like, that's probably not a good plan.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
That's very sweet. That's very sweet. And I it makes me think of just, you know, in closing, what we were talking about in the last breakout room I was in is like this sense of a lot of times what I think blocks us is not even so much stinginess as a lack of faith that what we have to give is worth it. Like that it's going to be received, or that it's welcome. Because we were talking about how it can be easier to give with children, or it can be easier to give. I talked about it being easy to give when I come to the Zen Center or I have this, right? Because I know everybody here wants to hear from me. I know you all want my attention, and I'm taking responsibility for, you know. So when you know that you're welcome and that what you have to give is valued, then it, you know, it flows pretty easily, which then of course means sometimes when we're stingy, we're thinking like, nobody really wants to hear from me. Or, you know, and your example of like, you know, your son wasn't thinking like, I'm going to do a great act of generosity for my mom here. It just was just responding to needs. All right. We offer the merit of our study and Sangha time together to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Parami. Thank you all for coming.
Good
night.
Good night.
Sweet dreams.
You too. Jill, oh, she was so perfectly framed by the little plant. All right, see you later.
Well, hang on.
Yeah.
Because I was bonked out of the breakout room, the recording will not stitch together, so I'll do my best, but it's going to be kind of choppy and kind of messy. But
so ordinarily you'll just if you go into breakout rooms, it'll just be like it'll just record the main room, and just the breakout rooms will just not be obviously recorded.
Right. Yep.